Who are you? What is this?
I said I know you. I know all about you. Yes, I want the box, and I'll leave with that if it's all I can get. I came looking for something more, and I think I found it. I'd like you to come with me.
How do you know about me?
I was hoping for a more relaxed conversation, but you're right, we don't have time. Contrary to what you told me, I doubt that you'll be sticking around. I know you killed two Corpus at Morlana One, and I know they're coming for you. Seems like such a waste to let them have you. Waste of talent.
Who are you?
That's the wrong question. The right question is, how much time do we have to get out of here?
Why would I go anywhere with you?
Don't you want to fight these bastards for real?
Hello and welcome to the podcast. I'm Jonathan.
And I'm James.
And this is Star Wars TV Cast, episode 31.
This episode, we're going to be covering Andor, season 1, episode 1, 2, and 3.
Excellent. I am glad that Andor is finally here. It's been a long wait and we're very happy. And what were your first thoughts, James?
Oh, it was terrible. I hated it. No, I'm kidding. Oh my god, it's exactly what I hoped for. I mean, I was a little confused to start with because I thought I was watching Blade Runner, but loving it.
Yeah,
it was incredible. The first 10 minutes just phenomenal. Like the rain, the running, the neon lit. It just hit everything. The music is still Star Wars, but it has that slightly sophisticated. I felt there was hints of Vangelis, there was hints of even of a little bit of John Carpenter here and there in the music.
Yeah.
Definitely a more mature thing. I had to pause it and check and see what the rating was because I was like, oh, is it? But I mean, you know, but Obi-Wan was the same, was TV 14 also.
Right.
We have been this mature before, but I just think in mood, it's... We're just going exactly, you know, Tony Gilroy is the man. I mean, this is
exactly,
this is on point from like the opening. And I'm starting to sort of ramble already, but like, let's even talk about the opening animation sequence with the titles. Just the way that the sun, like, you know, you see the crescent of the planet and then they rotate, like the Andor sort of logo comes in and it's just, yeah, it's a work of art, son. So yeah, I was not disappointed. And you?
It really was, and it was like that when you see that moon rising Andor insignia going into the Rebel logo. I got very excited already, and I was already very satisfied with it to begin with. But you know, I try not to get too excited for new Star Wars because there are so many ways for it to fall short, and one of them is not having a plan.
No.
But this one feels like they spend a lot of time on it, put a lot of effort through it. They've got a story that will run from beginning to end. There's you know, there will be an end to this. And it seems very well written, great dialogue, and it looks great. And that's, you know, I couldn't be happier, and I can't wait for the rest of the series.
It's one of those that it feels that the minute that they finished Rogue One, they started thinking about this because it feels like it's really well fleshed out, and it slots in perfectly.
And I was so disappointed at the end of Rogue One, as we spoke about last time, that was going to be it. And we had these great characters. So when they announced Andor, it took me by surprise, be with Cassian as a star, because that's a really good idea to base a series around him and take it back to a time where we're still in the original trilogy era and the same look and feel as all of that. So it's really great to have this series. I'm excited to get going.
Yeah,
Right, so we jump into our first points, James?
Yes, let's do it. Okay, my first point was my biggest niggle that I was concerned about. last time when we were talking about it, and you crushed me with the there is a child backstory, and I was like,
oh, yeah.
And I have to be honest, like first scene when we see it, I thought, oh, here we go. This is Caravan of Courage 2. Here we go. I was waiting for
you. Yeah, right.
But we're in the right hands here. Tony Gilroy has steered us right. This is just amazing. I mean, the world of Canary and young Cassian's, Casso as he's called then, like his origin tale is like, is handled so perfectly. I mean, I love the moral mirror that we have with our world. Again, you talked about this last time, how very clever how they mix Earth, real culture into that word. So we're more invested in it. But the moment that he pauses on the quest for that crashed ship and he looks over the vast hole in the gouge, and it's the
big open cut mine.
The open mine. Yeah. And is it Republic mine in operation? I think it is, because they say the Republican ship.
No, it's an empire.
Well, we are pre-empire, Jonathan. We are. That's what I thought, because they say,
yes,
quick,
of course.
When they have to leave, they're like, the Republican ship will be here in 9 minutes or whatever. And I was like, well,
yeah, you're right.
Like,
you're right.
So basically, we are now Republican equals Palpatine equals Empire, is the way I have it in my head.
There you go.
Anyway, it's that moment when
the Phantom Menace.
the Phantom Menace. It's when he looks over and you see this devastation. But I found, and again, the use of music was incredible, because he comes to that point, he stops, and initially the music builds and it's a moment of awe, and he looks across this incredible landscape with this like big hole and stuff. And then he turns and his head drops and he looks at his forest behind, and then the music takes a downturn as well. And it's a real sort of telling moment of basically the state of the Amazon rainforest and the tribes. That we, the problem.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. It really felt like they were based on an Amazonian tribe, down to the poison darts.
Oh, you stole my. Yeah, that was my next thing. It's like the old bits of like sort of like steel pipe that they're using is brilliant.
But it seems like I thought, like, oh no, there's a bunch of kids and young adults. So it's going to be, I thought it was going to be a bit Ewok-y as well. But as we start to get into it, I realize that that all the adults just must have been captured and put into slavery, because their village only seemed to have kids in it.
Well, again, that's the problem with this universe. Every time they open a door, there's 30 other doors that can open after it, because later on it's referred to as a mid-rim planet that's been abandoned after a mining disaster, and that's why I guess the people from the ship are poisoned, because I guess the locals are immune to it, to the gas. I don't know.
Well, that's what I thought. Yeah. I couldn't work it out, but then in the there was a wide shot of the ship that was crashed, and you just see this green mist coming up.
That's right. And also when Marva goes in there, they take off the mask because they say it's cleared now. But I do wonder if all the adults had died in a mining disaster
pre
this. And the, I mean, there's more to be told on this planet. And I was concerned about a child backstory, but I mean, I could watch a season of this. I mean, this is like,
I know,
so well done. And like, yeah, I'm very, yeah, it was handled really well, really, really well. So what's your first point then, Jonathan?
I'm going to start up with a cold opening, and we're just thrust straight into the location in the middle of a mission. We're in Morlag, we're on Morlag 1 in the corporate zone, BBY 5 before Battle of Yavin 5, and it's just like the perfect opening that I wanted. The fluoro lights, the rain, the hanging cables, the tension, and we're just right into it, and we're there. It's great to see Cassian Andor again, and when he's moving through the location, we walk to, he goes down those flight of stairs and bubble windows, sort of like the Amsterdam red light district, And there's just this slow burning, rising tension as he's searching, and we don't know quite what he's searching for, but he goes into the brothel and runs into those two guys, and it's just like classic Blade Runner. And I could see things based on Blade Runner time and time again. I'm never disappointed.
No, exactly. I mean, the vidphone booth that's used later by Tim as well. I'm like, Ridley Scott's production designer should either be really pleased with the nod or about to sue, because some of the design in this is just bang on the money. It's like somebody went in and went, you know, like we got Sid Meier's book out, and then they went to like Ridley's stuff, and it's like, oh, you just can't waste it because it's so incredible. But the plexiglass bubble sex workers was amazing.
Yeah. But I'll never be disappointed with that sort of thing, you know, because it's an established theme now.
Yeah.
And you always know that you're going to be in an interesting place, and it probably the type of show, movie you want to watch. You know, it's like when things open with fluorescent lights and rain, I'm in a very happy place.
Yeah.
But then so Cassian runs into the two corpo guards, and of course there's going to be trouble, and trouble ensues. And I love it when he walks out, and he's just walking away, and they just hit this close-up shot of Cassian, and they hold that frame, and you just watch him going through the range of emotions as the two guards come up to shake him down from the background.
I found that interesting as well, because you obviously, within halfway through that scene, we realize that this is a key turning point in his life. Because before this, you know, he's like, he's stolen things, he's smuggled things, he's done this. But after this, he's killed two corporation sort of security guards, or rent-a-cops, as I like to call them.
Yeah.
but yeah, it's that. Yeah, and you're right. The you can see his brain whirring. How do I deal with this?
Because he has a very short fuse, and when the two guys say that's a very tough look coming from such a little man or something along those lines. What? So I'm just like,
well, I thought that was interesting, because I was like, no, this is the badass from Rogue One, and then you're like, oh, hold on a minute, he's not there yet.
No.
It's like he's, even though he's got that shitty look and he's got the swagger about him,
yeah,
at this point it's still a front.
But he definitely would have a knife in his boot.
Yeah, well, yeah, who doesn't, Jonathan? Who doesn't?
Yeah, but you're right. He has not got to that point where he's been with the rebellion from all those years. But it was, I loved it when it was like the guards start to hassle him, and there's a nice tense music building. And then, you know, the classic, oh, just take it out of my pocket, and it's in my pocket. Yeah. You have to do it. And then he turns with a beautiful punch to the throat, taking the one guy down, and then a headbutt to the head. And then there's a classic accidental death after falling. Yeah. And then just to see that other guard that was hassling him before on his knees, just and squirming. He's like, you've killed him.
Yeah.
And then he starts to dawn on him that he is going to be killed, because there's no other way
because he's not trustworthy. He's just, you know, Andor's not going to go, oh, you're now going to be a good guy and not rat me out, are you? It's like, and again, Andor has to make a big decision, split second, that that moment that creates Andor the character.
Andor the character, but Andor the series, you know. Because then it comes just the shot to the face, the shot to the head, and he's dead, and we are off. And it's Andor, the dirty, gritty series we've been waiting for, and people die in this one. There's no, you're not going to get a lightsaber to the chest and survive in this series.
It's pretty solid work. It's like we're into this, literally into the shadows from the first scene, and it doesn't stop going. I love actually his, just to nerd off on it, when he escapes and his ship flies away. I just, that the shape of the ship, because it's like the back half, it's like a wide wing.
It's just beautiful.
Like, yeah.
Yes.
It's a half. I don't know. I've got some thoughts on some various ships and some various tech in the show that are amazing. Almost look like a bomber Y wing, but then a slightly bigger front end. And And I love all
and
of that.
And here's me thinking that it'd be too nerdy to bring up that the engines reminded me of Y-Wings. But, of course, that's why we're here, and I apologize to your listeners.
Hopefully none of anyone listening is going to think anything less of us for like nerding off on ship shape.
Exactly right. But that was a classic Y-wing tale as that ship leaves orbit.
Yeah.
And just another one of those beautiful wide shots, establishing shots that were all through this series, through these three episodes, I should say.
Yeah, there's some beautiful sort of play on like just showing us full environments and full planets and stuff.
Mm.
So it's very.
But it was good to see Cassian, and I thought he was as brutal as expected. And I was wondering if what do you think? Do you think that that him searching for his sister will be the through line to this story?
Yeah, because it's I hadn't thought of that obviously, and too much. I mean, he's got a lot on his plate. I mean, I think up until he meets Rael. Then possibly, but now that's on the back burner. But I'm sure that will come into play and stuff. And it's
because I guess it might be the B story to Andor is like the A story would be the joint.
While we're touching on that, I'm just curious. I mean, like the whole Marva sort of like rescuing him from the planet.
Mm.
I mean, like surely for years, either she lied and said that everyone else was dead and killed by the Empire when they came down to the planet, or he's going to hold like Marv responsible from taking him away from his sister. No, I don't know.
I know. I was wondering if that was just a bit of the loosest ends of this. One of the only criticisms is like that was a pretty kind of a brutal decision.
Yeah, it's like
oh no, everyone's going to die.
I'm going to abduct you from your whole tribe where you love and fight together and spend every day. I'm just taking you. I mean.
Yeah, exactly. Don't worry about them.
Yeah, yeah.
I won't try to rescue anyone else.
Yeah, I mean, I love Fiona Shaw, but that was child abduction. I'm just, sorry. But I have to say, like, while we're on the subject of her, like, I want to see her backstory. Because, I mean, like, when she comes in that ship with her partner and stuff, it's like, she's the original badass space pirate smuggler. Like,
absolutely.
Solo is nothing on this woman. It's like, she's like, she can teach them all. So I hope that she does feature like a lot more in it, like further down the line. Whether it's
I agree. She was like totally in control, and you're right. When she jumped into the pilot seat, it really reminded me of Han Solo jumping into the pilot suit of the Millennium Falcon.
There's a few sort of comparisons to Solo in this as well, and we can get to the other obvious one in a bit as well. But I mean, while we're touching on it, Fiona Shaw is an incredible actor, and like for everything from My Left Foot.
What else is she in?
Well, she was in My Left Foot. She's won she's won Olivier Awards like in London. She was in Killing Eve.
Yeah.
She plays like the head of CID, is it, or MI6, and that. And she was in the Harry Potter films as well.
Oh, of course, I can work out.
She's an incredible sort of like an amazing actor. Again, like the cast is just brilliant from like head to toe.
Which brings me
on to my next cast member, if I may speak.
Yes, go.
I'm going to beat you to this one. I was tricking you by saying cast member. So the consumer products department are having a wet dream. Christmas is coming and we have B2.
B2 was great, I thought.
He's like, his adorable imperfections, like the stutter, the failing battery. I mean, he needs to recharge to be able to like finish his sentences. And he's just the emotional tone as well, the way he's so attached to Cassian and stuff. And
it was like an old faithful dog.
Even the way his mannerism, where he bows his head and stuff, and there's little paws and stuff. But I mean, the design of him as well. It's like an R2 unit in body armor almost. It's like, I love that.
That's right. I loved how he would stack down when he felt threatened, but then only to get pissed on by those two guard pigs.
And then it pulls out the classic R2 sort of electrocution point as well.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
I thought he was great. And while we're on the subject of sidekicks, I want to hit my other favorite friend. He was only in this like for one scene, but like I loved him. It's like, so the scene where like Cassian's rushing off to like, you know, he's trying to put his deals in place to get off planet and doing everything, And the guy Nurchi, sort of the black guy, like tries to shake him down for his money that he owes him.
Oh yeah.
And he uses a large alien vetch as his henchman. It's brilliant. So and then like and Cassian turns to him and goes, "Is he paying you to do this?" And he's
yeah. Because I kind of don't want to be here,
paid
but,
to stand here and stuff. Yeah. And he's just fucking brilliant and like and just so good. And I like I think Vetch is like hopefully is used more because I see him he could be amazing as Cassian, sort of like Chewy. You imagine
yeah.
Is his sort of like yeah, big lumbering sidekick. But while we're nerding off, so Vetch is played by a guy called Ian White, who actually was 1-1, which is the giant from the north in Game of Thrones.
Right.
Look at his, if you actually do what I did, which is Google him and look at his face structure and his nose and stuff, he was the huge ice giant that sort of like comes from the north and stuff and all that. But I just think like the back and forth, even just the, you know, the blunt words, like is just like another classic sort of sidekick that hopefully will get used, but we will have to see. We'll have to see. So.
Yeah. But getting back to B2EMO or B2EMO,
nice touch.
Who we meet when we first arrive on Ferrix, and I'm glad there are some new planets in Star Wars, by the way, that we're not back on Tatooine or another, you know, desert planet somewhere. But B2EMO, B or B, as he's known, is played by Dave Chapman, and he did some puppetry work. He did several puppetry characters, but he also did the he voiced the beeps of BB-8.
I was going to make some snide comment that B was like the great grandfather of
the square BB-8 version.
Yeah, because they have similar mannerisms, don't they? A little bit awkwardness and all the rest of it.
Yeah. So he's gone from just a few beeps to now voicing a character, which is really good. But what I really loved about was that there was a reason for the voice lag, and it wasn't just cute. Mm. It was because he was old and he's just like, you know, this, my memory's skipping.
Yeah.
You know, and it was really good to see him in that in the flashback when he was brand new and just rolling through things. And exactly.
Like all of us now, Jonathan, we're buffering a lot of the time. My brain buffers about 20% of the day, I think, now.
But I thought there were some perfect moments of when B came in, it really felt like Wally when he's like rolling through the empty environment. And and one of a really nice touch was when he came up onto the ship, he kind of slid sideways when he came into the interior of the ship, which gave it a much more believable feel. There were actually physics involved in it, which I thought was a very nice touch. Okay, so that was half of my point as well. B2 was one of my ones. But let's go on to, I want to talk about the world building. I just thought it was just beautiful future analog. You know, obviously created in 1977, and their vision of the future still has switches and lights and levers.
Lots of heavy
and things.
Buttons, be impressed.
Exactly. Yeah. Not just an iPad.
No. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. No, it is great. I mean, in the salvage yard or whatever, or where Bix and Tim work as well. Just I love the consoles and like, you know, their inventory computers, as it were. I was just watching the graphics on them when they're just sort of in the background.
And they're all made from very big, thick plastic.
Yes.
And all the backgrounds felt so full and really busy. There were people everywhere, so they didn't skimp on extras, and it didn't feel like they were shooting right up against the volume and like some digital background. Because I think they did build the entire city in Pinewood.
I think, it definitely looks real, and you sort of spot some of it. I can see some sort of very English sort of archways and stuff. Again, in that same thing, there's... It looks like, it's done in railway arches or something, and then it's all been added on and stuff. But yeah, there's a lot of physical sets and a lot of practical sort of work in it, and it makes it work, and it gives it that real grimy sort of like, you know, like working town.
And it really goes back to George Lucas's a lived-in universe, and all the signs were aged, and there were so many people, and like I loved the color palette of it with the costumes of the yellow, the orange, and the reds and the browns. very specific, going, you know, opposite to the corpo blues.
Yeah.
But one of the great shots, I thought, and I'm still trying to work out what it was, I guess it's just basically as, you know, the changing of the shifts, was that wall of gloves.
Yes. No, I thought about this, and I didn't research into it, but I think that is a reference to the old days of coal mining. I think they used to leave something there. So in case anyone was left behind, they would know after a shift. You know what I mean? If
right.
Like, I think it used to be they would have their normal shoes and they put their work boots on to go down the mine. I think. And so then
that makes sense.
The shift changer, if there was suddenly, say, for instance, in this, if you saw a pair of gloves that were still there, it was like, shit, he's still down there.
You're right. I think so.
Yeah.
And even if you're not, even if it wasn't intentional, I think that's a really good part, because Cassian's friend, he just puts his gloves up with a sigh of resignation, you know, once more into the mine or into the.
He almost gives it like a second touch, almost a good luck touch or something, like he's going to make it out of the mine.
Yeah, that's
right. But they're not actually in the mine, are they? They're stripping ships.
No, they're stripping ships. Ship breaking yards,
which are incredible as well, by the way.
So, yeah, but I'm sure it's really dangerous, and you know, people are dying all the time, and no one cares, and so that really makes sense. Oh, good, that explains something for me.
It's probably completely wrong, and I'm sure somebody can write in and just put me in my place quite happily. But I mean, I seem to remember reading or seeing something with old coal mines and stuff like that.
And the other thing I found really interesting was that they refer to humans as humans. So, like, when they were looking for Cassian, it was a human of dark skin, which I don't or dark features, which I don't think we've really heard before in the Star Wars universe, as that humans are being referred to. And even that must mean that the humans are just a species that is scattered around the universe that came up on many different planets.
No, you're totally right. Because they describe him as like a dark-haired human from Canary, whereas before it'd be like, Tatooine. Oh, yeah. What are you, a Tatooine-y? I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah.
Sure. It's like, I'm just... I guess it's shortening humanoid form, isn't it? They're not just calling it human. To describe how many limbs the person has that they're chasing.
That's true.
And I guess you also get to a point where, like, there's so much space travel that you're cross-pollinating, so you're going to have planets that have got, as we see, multiple races now living together and stuff.
But on Canary, that seems to be a pretty much an undiscovered planet that hadn't met aliens until the Republic/Empire turned up, and they seem to be native humans on the planet. So it seems that within the Star Wars universe, that humans are just scattered throughout the world, rather than, say, the Wookiees only come from on one planet, and the Yoda species from one. But it seems that humans are scattered throughout the universe, which would explain why they're so prevalent in Star Wars.
Convenient, that as well.
Very convenient.
Saves a fortune in prosthetics.
Less time in the monster room, in the creature room.
Doing that,
But the other beautiful things have just been all the space shots of ships flying past planets have just been amazing. And that's one of my favorite things. And they really spend a lot of time and budget, it seems, on these establishing shots, because they're so important and they're so Star Wars. You know, like the first shot we see in Star Wars is the ships coming past those planets.
The ships, like, again, I touched on one earlier, but the other one is Stellan Skarsgård, his Lutheran Vrail's ship, like we see that and it comes in, and I'm just looking at the shape of it, and then I was like, I've seen that somewhere before. Where have I seen it? I've seen it. And you will probably know where you've seen it. I mean, you put many hours in. It's in the Star Wars game, it's in Battlefront 2.
Is it?
Yeah. But also what I love about that ship is the entrance ramp, it just reeks of the Falcon. It's just so many, like the interior design, and even I know the cockpit is slightly different, but it still has that glass hood over it, and they come in and stuff. And I'm just excited to see more of that ship as we move through the series as well, because I feel it's a beautiful piece of kit. I mean, it just feels like a a faster, sleeker, smaller Falcon. So it hopefully we'll get to see a bit more of it. So
anyway, yeah, and it really added to the world building, because I've always wondered how, when you're in space and coming to land on a random planet, how you find somewhere to put down.
Yeah.
Like when in the prequels, when they landed that beautiful mirror ship in the middle of the desert, the chrome ship. Yeah. And just sort of plonked it down in the middle of the desert. I'm like, how do they get back in? But then he just talks to his onboard computer, and it finds a landing spot for him, and they know how far it is. And then he has his binoculars, and he sees the shuttle bus into town.
That's...
So he's just got to walk to the shuttle bus. But that, like, even in Star Wars, you've got to have a shuttle bus, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and the shuttle ride into town. I mean,
that was
classic. I know, it's brilliant. But I mean, let's just talk about Skarsgård for a minute again. It's like, he was incredible in Chernobyl, and then there was a British series I watched him in called River, where he was he was a mentally fragile cop who was having visions of his murdered partner and stuff. And he's like, so he's another incredibly well-trained actor who comes into this universe and just... Yeah.
Well, it's classic Star Wars, isn't it? Getting an old school classic.
Exactly. It's Alec
actor.
Guinness again. It's another Alec Guinness. It's Sir Alec Guinness, of course. But he's just from the minute you see him, just the confidence and the way he walks, and he comes down with such aplomb and authority. And I love... He walks off his ship to get onto the shuttle bus, and he's. But again, just the cape just reeks of Obi-Wan, and then he has this. Now he has a walking cane, or is it a samurai sword? Because at times,
it's
incredible. No, I just want to talk about this, the train ride into the city, because again, another 100%. Great.
Power blackouts. They happen every year, but guess what? Blackouts. You've met your match. Say hello to Goal Zero, the leader in affordable home power backup systems and solar generators. Goal Zero's generators power your fridge, freezer, lights, Wi-Fi, TV, and more with clean power. Their home backup systems, like the Yeti 3000X, have no fuel, no fumes, no noise, and no maintenance. Just good, clean energy that keeps your home up and running. They offer a range of products and affordable price points, from power stations that can provide a half day's worth of power to solar generators and home backup systems that can keep you powered for 1, 2, or 3 days. Plus, they're all portable, so you can take your power with you when you go camping, tailgating, and more. So yeah, take that, blackouts. Our power is here to stay. Have peace of mind when blackouts hit. Go to GoalZero.com to learn more.
Why does Comcast Business power more businesses than any other provider? It has technology solutions that put you ahead, like the fastest reliable network and serious savings. Whether your small business is starting or growing, you need Comcast Business. Comcast Business, powering possibilities.
Social commentary and like just tying into the real world. It's like he's getting the shuttle ride into Ferrix Terminal, right? And he's getting on board and he's going on this mission. And of course, you got the chatty propulsion salesman. Hello. And it's like, he's even down to, he's got a case of samples, and he's got the Bluetooth headset in as well. You know, he's got the headset in. And you know he's not going to take no for an answer. He's going to talk to you no matter what.
Well, he's going to sit next to you.
Yeah. I mean, I tell you, whenever I go on a job and I get on a plane, this is exactly why I put my headphones on the minute I get in my seat. Because you just don't want it. And I was waiting for Skarsgård just to put some headphones on. But no, and then the guy gives him the backstory. Oh, I've been coming here for, you know, decades. And like, well, we should be charging them. They stick it to you. Where'd you park your ship and all this? The man is on a mission. And then like, now his mission is just to avoid this fucker for the next 20 minutes. He's like, all right. You know, it's like, even when they get off and he's like, oh, where are you staying? You're not staying in the hotel, are you? It's like, oh, they gouge you. And it's all this. And it's like, you know, it's just brilliant. It's like,
but nothing annoys me more than having to pay for parking when you go to a mall.
Oh, exactly.
They charged me for parking. I'm here spending money.
I'm spending money in your mall. You're making me pay some more money. But I thought that was, again, just another light moment in there before, you know, it goes into this dark sort of deal. And again, that's how the show plays it really well. Again, we have these moments in between this really grittier story that sort of like lift the tone a little bit here and there and just give you a little chuckle and stuff.
Well, it's classic Star Wars, isn't it? Yeah. And not modern sequel Star Wars, where the humor doesn't come from gags, it just comes from situations.
Oh, yeah, and this one is just full of them. It's there's some great sort of nods to our society.
But I really liked him because he was like such a British character actor. Mm. You know, he's in the Star Wars in a galaxy far, 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 far away, a long time ago, but he's still wearing a pork pie hat. Yeah. You know. Well, that brings me into my next one. This was like pure British Star Wars. You know, there were so many great British actors, and it was really nice to hear all the British accents in it again, because it really made it feel like Star Wars.
But again, they're all playing the bad guys, aren't they? Well, we're in the grey area, so they're playing the slightly sort of bad guys and stuff. But yeah.
Like, you know, when we first meet Cyril, I think his name is, not, is it Cyril, the young officer? Yes. That's good. Yes. Yeah. I thought it was brilliant. I thought when he came in to meet his superior, it was like an old colonial war film. You know, with the guy was there with his handlebar moustache, and there's the upright young officer playing by the rules in a complacent world, and nothing is right. And he's like, I learned all the regulations, and he's a classic fresh out of officer college and straight into the front lines and knowing nothing. Exactly. And then you got the...
Yeah. He was... Again, he's like the ultimate overachiever again. We're back to the Krennic story. It's like if Krennic had a son, this is him. And it's and I love that corporation worker office. Went into this last time, but I've got to do it now. It's like, this is like David Brent territory. This is like The Office. I mean, can we please do a comedy spin-off of just this corporation? Because it's just...
Exactly. So good.
I mean, they're bitching and the bat-chatting about their overtime, and they're slurping on blue noodles. And
There's blue noodles.
One of them comes running in, and she's like, she's got a thermos of coffee, and she's like, I just can't sit down. It's like, oh, it's just brilliant. And then when you get that moment when Khan gets in, he's all riled up and he's determined to fight. And he's like, Canary males on Ferrix? I'm afraid that's a blank, sir. It's like, sorry, mate. Well, we can't find him. And it's like, it's just like, again, we're in a real world scenario, but like in Star Wars. And it's like,
yeah, and everyone's just ignoring him. And you know, he's like, well, is it really worth the effort? You know? That means I have to work all night. Yeah, but that was really interesting in The Office one, because I've always wondered what those clear screens were with the arcing lines on them that you saw on Hoth, for example, in the background of the war planning room. Air traffic control. Yeah, exactly.
It is. But that, yeah, the whole thing with Khan is like, it's just, as you said, he's straight out of Office to school. He's like, he's never been on the front line. He's got no experience, and he's determined to show, you know, like show his boss that he knows best. And like, and that sergeant, was it Linus Mosk, when he comes in, the Scottish guy.
He was brilliant.
He's aggressive, motivational conversation, like just basically ass-kissing Khan. But his motive is there. He's like, this fool is going to let me go and kick someone's butt. It's like, these guys are just rent-a-cops itching for a fight. And it's like, steers Khan into the confrontation. Like, you know, he's like this poor young sort of like officer who's like all riled up, and as you said, wants to do the right thing and follow it by the rules.
Yeah.
And he's now being led off to a path of like just carnage.
Yeah. So what is that character's name? The young officer.
The young officer.
Because I kept missing it.
Cyril Khan.
Cyril Khan. Okay, that's his last name, because I couldn't even find
Khan
Cyril.
His last name. Yeah. So,
okay, good. Mm. But that Sergeant Kostek was just fantastic. You know, he's a little overweight, but he, you know, he's like there in there with all the grunts and the perfect sergeant. And the best part about him was his sideburns. You know, those sideburns should have their own Instagram account as well. You know, it really brings us back into the whole 70s feel of the, you know, of original Star Wars.
Base facial hair of the 70s.
Yeah, which is just space hair now. Space hair.
I love this whole idea that we now have a different enemy. And then you know, we're so used to it being the Empire, or, you know, the First Republic, or whatever you want. But now We are the First Order, sorry. But now we have like a corporation. We just have like a money-fueled like corporation that is the evil empire, as it were, for this one.
Yeah, that seem to just take over entire planets and to run it there for their own benefit. And
Well, I mean, that's the real world, right? Again, I mean, I'm sure that's another one they're mirroring at. We're talking about certain companies and corporations. We're not going to name names for sponsorship reasons.
But I loved when when we first meet him and he's talking to the colonel, and the colonel's just so jaded. I think he's a colonel. And he's just got his handlebar moustache there and he's leaning back into his chair. And Khan goes, I wouldn't be worthy of the uniform. And he goes, have you modified your uniform?
That's brilliant, isn't it? Yeah, just a little.
Just pockets and some piping and some light tailoring.
Some light tailoring, sir. Yeah.
Not too much, just a little bit around. You know.
He's very, very.
Well, that just it was such a showing the ego of this guy, you know, fresh out of the academy and wanting to prove his worth to everyone. And but juxtaposed to his face at the end of the third episode.
Exactly. I'm sure you're going to cover some of that. I won't dig into it too much, but just to his shell shocked like face again, as you reference back to like, you know, maybe it's like First World War or something like that, and you have his officers sending the men over the top, and it's like, go on, son, off you go, and it's just. You know, all of a sudden you're just surrounded by like dead bodies, and it's like, and it's all on him. It's like, and we're back to the
because I'm not even sure that I'm sure that when the officer the colonel gets back, I will call him the colonel. Okay, I'm sure I'll say I did not approve this mission. You know, he went off and did it on his own.
That's it. I mean, I was going to go back into my office mode again. It's like Monday morning. I'm going to write. I was going to write a report. This is a bit awkward now. But it's like he just. But again, I put it down to the sergeant who just aggressively motivates him and steers him for his own benefit.
He wanted to use some guns, didn't
exactly.
he?
Exactly. Yeah. It's they've been sitting there. They're getting paid. They're getting fat. They're getting bored. And they got an opportunity to go and stomp. They're just like bullies. They just want to go and stomp on this town.
Yeah.
And they get very excited to get their big guns out and. And we know how that goes, but I mean that's another whole thing. I mean, that is brilliant. Like with the villagers are running around and they're tapping on the metal pipe, and they start almost it starts off as a warning, and then as Marv sort of like starts to intimidate her captors, it's like you don't want to worry now, you want to worry when it stops and stuff, and it's just ominous, and that's brilliant, and it starts from this. Desperate sort of warning to Cassian to a rally cry for the whole town, and it's I mean, another sort of like reference to how resistance are built, I guess. It's just, you know, they've taken one of ours, they've taken an old lady hostage, we're not going to stand for this, and then they sort of build and they rally together and and they triumph, Jonathan. They triumph.
Yes. It was classic because when they first arrived, their blue uniforms just stood out so far, so much against, apart from all the others. And they obviously haven't visited Ferrix very often. They obviously stay on their own corporate planet. But when they turn up, everyone notices them, the word gets out. And then should we go into into the final battle / recruitment?
it is pretty amazing.
But it was just so beautiful when that the Corpo dropship just comes out of Lightspeed, and it's just this gigantic, you know, diamond shaped ship.
That's really that's a classic spaceship like nerd off time again. It's like there's no aerodynamics needed in space. It's like literally a brick just drops out of high space. It's like vroom. And then like in the pods when they just. Doosh, doosh,
doosh. And the pods are just sitting there, and you can just, you know what's coming, and it's so exciting. And again, that thrumming music is building and building and building. then we see Andor, Cassian waiting in the warehouse with all the engines hanging from the ceiling. Yeah. And that was one of the most spectacular designs I've seen in a long, long, long time.
That's, yeah, that was, I was exactly like, the fight mechanics of that room are brilliant. Right? You know, there's these big cogs and then the chains and then the hanging sort of like engine block. That whole scene is just brilliant. Just again, it's Skarsgård's like confidence when he enters the room and when he turns from sort of like adversary stroke trader to recruiter.
Because earlier on in episode one, well, when he's trying to get when Cassian's trying to get Bix to arrange the meeting, Cassian was saying he wants to meet me. So he was obviously aware of Cassian, and it seemed like the whole thing time they were talking about completely different things. You know, while Cassian's trying to get the deal done, you know Luthen's trying to test him, and he's trying to figure out how he got a hold of the MacGuffin box.
How he managed to infiltrate so easily the Empire to get the pieces as well. So,
and it was very interesting how he was talking about that you know they're so fat and full of themselves, they don't notice anyone amongst their mitts because they couldn't even picture someone doing that.
Yeah, the arrogance of it now. They think they've crushed everyone across the galaxy and they can now do whatever they want. Yeah.
And it really was very cool when they started banging on steel and everyone's kind of running away, but bang, 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 and everything's closing down and they're clearing the streets because they know there's a fight coming.
It was great. It was very sort of Western, sort of like High Noon sort of thing. Everyone just suddenly like closes their doors and windows and they disappear away. It's like, because they know what's coming.
Yeah, a spinning bottle on the bar as everyone's just
exactly. Yeah. Everyone just boom, turns into clouds of dust, just like disappears and stuff. That's
closing down the shutters and everything. Yeah,
yeah.
But it was such a great scene, and it really was. Again, what I love about Andor is that the blasters have power, and people will get killed. You know, and it's classic spy craft, which I think this really is going to hopefully be a Star Wars version of a Cold War spy movie. You know, it's classic tradecraft to make sure you've got an alternate exit and he obviously had the slap charges that he left behind. And the sound effects, it got like each shot of the blasters had resonance and depth and power behind them.
I also think there was a different sound to them. They felt like not as pew pewy anymore. Yeah. It's almost as if they had suppressors on them or something. There was a different sound to it. It's like nicely done. So can we nerd off on weapons for a minute?
Yes, please.
So I'm sorry, everyone. So when he
don't be sorry. This is why everyone is here.
Well, I mean, I may have this completely wrong, but anyway. So when Cassian is like the renter cops pull him in the street at the beginning of episode one, and he takes him down, the blaster he takes from the corporal guy looks exactly the same as Solo's.
So that's what I thought as well.
Like, so if it's the same weapon, I was like, oh, pretty cool. I wonder if he keeps it, because then he'll have a gun light. But I think he just panics and drops it, doesn't he? And then later on, and I'm sorry to do this again, but this is my Ridley fetish, and I'm sorry. Maybe it's just the lighting, I don't know. But when he's getting prepared to go for the meeting and stuff, you see him and he's in the dark room and there's the shafts of light coming through the grate from above, and he pulls out his weapon and checks his gun. And I swear that looked like Deckard's blaster from Blade Runner.
It looked exactly like
Deckard's, almost a double barrel sort of blaster thing. Yeah. And I was like, exactly. Nice touch as well. It's just nice to see, you know, the attention to detail again, and just like different weapons being used by different people for different reasons and stuff. So it was, it's a nice.
What I loved was when he pulled the gun on Khan's head when he snuck up behind him. And instead he cocked the pistol and the internals rotated.
It's almost like crazy. It's almost like a double barrel shotgun at the end, and it opened and you see the chambers load. It was like,
yeah,
very nice touch. You can just see them in sort of the the weaponsmith sort of like working on that. It's very exciting when that close-up shot was done. It's like, oh yeah, it's like worked for a month on that mechanism. It was great. But I just want to do a shout out to Adria. I mean, like, Bix's character is like such strong. I just feel that we've suddenly gotten into this and we're getting it all into the spies and the Cassian thing. And I just want to point out, like, I feel that she's such a really big, strong character in this, and she hasn't been explored enough. And I hope we return to this planet to see more of her, or we see her story arc appear somewhere else. Because, I mean, clearly, like, the death of Tim sparked a flame inside.
Yeah.
Now, we don't know which way...
the tragic death of Tim. Yeah, Tim, the most un-Star World
lover. Tim, you fool.
Getting friend-zoned.
And... But I just wonder how
Tim is the most un-Star Wars name that we've had so far. Sorry, Tim.
But yeah, our good friend Tim would be upset with that. But no, I'm just curious how that will play out. I mean, you know, is she going to blame the corporation and by default the Empire? Yeah. And now she would join the resistance and she'll become like a strong fighter and we'll see a lot more of her. Mm. I hope so. And
I'm glad she wasn't too sassy either.
Yeah, no, she was strong and like she was sexy, but she used it in a, you know, in a powerful way. And she almost like it, and the way she, in effect, she seduces Tim to distract him the night before the big, like, you know, just to try and throw him off the scent and stuff. So I think, she's a great character, and I do hope that they sort of like we see more of her, because it's
I'm sure they will, because it's like I was thinking she's already in touch with Luthen
and the fact that she, you know, she climbs that tower and she knows, you know, she's sending secret signals.
That was one of my favorite things, was that the secret communications halfway up the smokestack.
Can I use the back room, please? Oh, yes. Behind the blue cables. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. It's like, it's great. And she climbs up there. And again, very mechanical, like just the flicking of the switches and the clunking of the buttons to transmit an intergalactic signal. So it's very good. But I hope we see more of her, because she didn't get much chance to kick ass in this, but I think she has potential to do that. So
no, but I think she has a great role, and it's actually a nod to Rey, really, as as a bit of a scrapper. But I love that in her workshop, the walls were just filled with pieces of equipment, and there was layer upon layer of broken machinery everywhere. Every frame was filled. You know, there wasn't an empty space. So there wasn't anything repeated. It didn't feel, it really felt lived in, which is really good.
It felt like a real sort of like, workshop, junkers yard and stuff. And it's, all credit to the art department. It's amazing.
Yeah, absolutely. And so anyway, mate, let's get back to the final battle, which was a highlight after a nice slow burn in the first two episodes. It was great to see some explosions and gunfire. And even though the sergeant was very kind of just there to kick some ass, I thought he was very well organized. He had a good plan.
Oh, he'd seen service. He'd seen service for sure, but I'm not sure when and where. Yeah. His rallying speech on the dropship.
Was hilarious.
Again, it's such an awkward moment. He's like fires them all up, and then he turns around and all yours, sir. And and Khan steps forward and he's like, you can just see all the troops just like drifting off.
Deflating,
Again, it's a classic office moment. It's like David Brent. It's like, it's just painful.
With the forced clapping.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I swear one of them's even giving it the slow clap. You're getting a slow clap off on it. And that's like, it reminded me actually a little bit of in Aliens. I mean, the dropship there where you get the corporate guy, I forgot the names right here, but same kind of things. Like, yeah, and they're all like, yeah, fuck you. Like, you don't know what you're talking about and stuff. But that just leads you into what's coming next. And you know, we get.
But some other highlights of the battle was a nice plan, if not the predictable, was to send the speeder out. You know,
the dummy.
An unmanned speeder. Yeah.
Wow, I mean that was a great move, and again that is what shows this to be a different Star Wars film show. So you send that out, and if this had been in any other one, it'd be a pew pew pew, and they'd have stopped it, and the other one would have gone ha ha and zipped off the other way. But oh no!
Well, the speeders actually looked like they were speeding in this in Boba Fett, whereas they're going in slow motion.
Yeah, right. don't start digging into them again, Jonathan.
So. But that's the great comparison. That's why I think Andor is working so well, and I'm really excited about the rest of the series. Is that it doesn't feel comedic at all. It feels like, you know, what I always wanted is a real story set in the world of Star Wars. That, you know, like Star Wars is a place, you know, that you go to and you can set any story in it. And I really feel that this is almost the first one that has managed to achieve that. And I love Mandalorian, of course, but that's this is a different beast. This is the Blade Runner of Star Wars.
Well, I mean, and it set the tone back with Rogue One, and we talked about this before, but like how the street battle in Rogue One was like an insurgency battle, like where they're, you know, everyone like hides and you see a sniper on the roof, and then like, you know, the troopers come around the corner. And this is very similar. We have the dummy speeder that comes out, and the corpo sort of like soldiers stop it, and they go to investigate. And then good old ruthless Skarsgård IADs them, just wipes out a quad of them. As I said, he like in the PG sort of world of Star Wars, that would have been distraction enough, and they'd have zipped off in the other way. There was no need to like just hit the self-destruct and
blow
just,
up four of them.
Yeah, take them all out. But again, that leads us into the shell shock, like Khan, and realizing that he has caused the death of numerous people, and he's literally blood on his hands. He's just stood there, like
an amazing acting from the guy that playing Khan, who is Kyle Soller. Kyle Soller. And I thought that he did a phenomenal job. And you're right; it was very, very World War One, where they're going over the top, and the lieutenants needing to make a decision, and the sergeant screaming at him to try and wake him up as everything's falling apart.
But it's a class war thing, isn't it? As well, it's showing that it's like, you know, this is a highly educated man who has like been trained in all of the books on all of the laws of the corporation.
And read all the books on war, but has never been in one.
Exactly.
And doesn't realize what sending a man to his death is like.
Yeah, no. Which again is reflection again of Cassian. If we go back to episode one, where Cassian is forced to like kill his first person, where he has to shoot the guy there. And it's like, and this is how two different people handle death in front of them in different ways.
Because it did seem that Cassian had kind of owes everyone money and is running out of options.
But I don't,
it was very low level until he was cornered.
Well, he was forced into a situation, whereas Khan creates a situation that put many innocent people in jeopardy.
And just from his own hubris, because the colonel had told him, like, and described the situation actually exactly how it happened, that the two guys, the two officers that were going to an illegal brothel,
which,
you know, spending money they shouldn't
have. They shouldn't have been there. Yeah. It doesn't actually supposedly exist. And
picked on a man he shouldn't have.
Exactly. And
the other moment in the battle was, I thought, which was again the, you know, guerrilla tactics insurgencies, was when they sent the guy off to the pod to get some aerial reconnaissance. Yeah. But of course, you know, when they're bashing those bars for a reason, all making those mechanical things. Yeah. And so, of course, all the pods are booby-trapped now. And to see that one just wrap around, take off, get pulled down by the anchor, and then wrap itself around the building
It was really nice, because I was expecting it just to blow up. But the fact that they played a full physics game with it was, it's basically trying take off, and it's got like a huge like engine block or cargo thing hanging off it, and it's like just swinging one way, and he's trying to counteract it, and it's a really nice touch to put that in there.
All right, anything else, James?
Yes, one more thing. It's a small thing.
One more thing.
But I really liked it. So it's like just the town bell ringer in the town.
Oh, yeah. It was cool. Yeah.
How good is that? Because you just think nothing of it. Like you have all these towns and there's always a bell ringing to come to service and stuff. And, you know, I was recently in Italy and they were hand pulling the church bell, and it was, you know, and you can actually see the guys doing it. But this just takes it a step further. The guy steps up there and it's just the whole.
Yeah.
It's the whole ceremony. He adjusts himself.
Very theatrical.
Clears his throat. Whoa. Picks up both hammers and then begins. And it's just beautiful. And I just thought that was a very nice, different thing. He's like the most melodic ironmonger you'll ever. He's like the blacksmith.
Clearly enjoyed his role, doesn't he?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, who wouldn't? I just love the way he's up there and he adjusts his headphones so he's not deaf completely. He's up there like probably three times a day, and like, I'm sure they're not in, you know, he's not covered for health insurance on this planet, I'm sure. So I best put my headphones on. But that was just one of those little touches that these shows have that it's like you just. You just sprinkle,
but that just adds to the whole world building, you know, and it feels very familiar, but also very alien as well.
Mm, yeah, it just adds a little bit more to it. It's good.
Any other notes, James?
Yeah, I'd just like to just talk about the final scene and the escape, as it were, and we've had the big battle now. We've set the scene. Like he's been recruited. And we're off. And I just love the way we cut between young Cassa and grown Cassian.
Yeah.
And they're both, you know, the music is rising and it's getting more aspirational. And as the ships sort of leave the atmosphere and we see young Cassa look up past Marva and we see the golden warmth of the sun hit him.
Right.
And he sees the sun from orbit for the very first time.
From space, you're right.
And meanwhile, all the time we're cutting between Cassian, who's with Luthen, and in not the Falcon, but we'll call it, just in that cockpit. And
in
again,
the fake Falcon.
And he's basically starting the next part of his journey. So we sort of finish up his initial story where he was child abducted by Marva.
Yeah.
and then rescued, that's what my parents told me. So then we have the next like thing, but it was just a really nice touch, and the music and everything builds, and it from what is a very dark show, and maybe if you go from the first scene to the end scene, this is the perfect start of this arc, because we go through, you know, we go through a full transition already. So we go through the darkness and then a little bit of redemption. And then we are aspirational and we're off and we're into, you know, we're into almost into a new hope.
That is the interesting thing. It does feel like introductory movie. I hope people didn't watch it one episode at a time.
Exactly. It had three acts.
But also on the Cassa seeing space for the first time, it's obvious that there is no prime directive in Star Wars. You know, it seemed that there was a planet that had never seen anyone from space or from another planet, and they just dropped into a tribal society on a planet and just started cutting up mountains.
Yeah. Screw it, rape and pillage time. Here we go. When you're building Death Stars, you need a lot of wood, apparently.
Well, no, exactly.
It's like, what's the Empire doing with all this wood? Are they building wooden ships somewhere? I'm just become confused. So, yeah, I mean, maybe all of the parents were enslaved.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah, I mean, it's probably the case, I guess. Because the Empire likes to use all its resources.
I've got a couple of other notes, things that amused me. One of them was it's good to know that they have coffee in Star Wars.
Oh, yes. What's it called again? Calf.
It's called Calf.
I'm going to go get myself a calf in a minute, I tell you.
Yeah.
Probably a small cow I'll get. Probably I'm in Canada, so probably just give me a small cow.
Yeah, exactly. I wonder if the coffee is blue as well.
Oh.
But it was amusing to see the blue noodles.
The blue noodles were brilliant. That was. But I love the fact that the takeout boxes are the same as they are on Earth, exactly the same color.
I know. I was just like, do I like that or not? But when you kind of like that whole, there's that little bit of like, it was just like The Office.
I love that so much, man. I really, really want to do a spin-off podcast where we could just do that. But it's the overtime. I don't know if I can be. It's brilliant. I would kill for it, a comedy Star Wars version of The Office. Anyway,
no, exactly, yeah. Right.
What else amuses you?
Now after we have finally we have a serious Star Wars series, now you can do your whatever you like. But please just let us have this one where it's a serious, mature Star Wars series.
Yeah, no, I think it will. I mean, this one does it really well. It's very mature and it's dark. But as you said, there's little nods and little chuckle moments in it, which just keeps it from being, you know, because you know, you just push through three episodes. You don't need it all dark and death all the way. So it was a nice balance.
But I thought it had the perfect amount of Star Wars humor.
Yeah, it didn't love and thunder it. It didn't overdo it.
Yeah, so. No, exactly. No, but that's the exact point. Mm. And that's what I kept, you know, that's what Boba Fett felt like a little bit, that it became a bit like Thor, and it was just, you know, when Thor and Jason, you know, Jason, if you're listening, you know, I get annoyed when Thor turns out to be a bit of a joke, but I'm glad they're not doing that in this series, and if they want to do it in other ones, fine, but let's just have this one series where it's not a joke, or it's taken seriously.
You're safe, mate. I think this one.
No, you're right. All right. Let's see. Another little Easter egg that I noticed was that when Marva was looking through Cassian's room, there was basically a little stuffed panther.
Yes, yes.
Did you see that?
Yeah, I did. And that was interesting because know what that means. You know that, like, when he was growing up, they went to Tatooine. Because everyone goes to Tatooine.
For the planet that is the furthest from
the center of the galaxy or whatever, however Luke describes it, an awful lot of people go there. So it's like, it has an awful lot of traffic for being that, you know, out of the way.
Yeah.
But
Yeah,
that was a nice little touch in there as well.
All right, let's see if there's anything else. I have an Only in Star Wars moment was when the shuttle craft arrived, they had a droid set of stairs moving up to the thing.
Yeah, yeah. And doesn't he miss a line? Doesn't he? Yeah. And he has to realign. I was actually thinking the amount of times I got on planes and you have to sit there and wait for them to bring those ladders up. And it's like,
right.
The minute they invent these, brilliant. They were there straight away. It's like, yeah.
Nothing could ever go wrong with that.
Oh, no. Yeah. Halfway down, it moves.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, listen, let's wrap it up. I think we're both very happy with how Andor started, and I hope everyone is too. I think we're just going to move on to the listener feedback.
Yeah.
All right, if you'd like to write into us, please do. And if you didn't have time to write in this week, please send in your feedback to the Podcastica Facebook page or at podcastica.com. You can find out where to send us some feedback. But please send us feedback for episodes 1, 2, and 3 as well, and of 4, which we'll be covering next week, obviously. But our first feedback comes from our fearless leader, Jason Kabasi. And Jason says, okay, I'm only about 15 minutes in and I'm already loving this show. I wanted to get something in before you record. If this first scene is any indication, it seems clear that this show will set itself apart from the rest of Star Wars in a great way, just like Rogue One did. The gritty, mature vibe, the edgy tension, the spare natural dialogue, shadowy, sketchy environments, and it just feels like this show is creatively confident, knows what it wants to be, and it knows that it's a cool show. I think you're right. This could be the Star Wars series we've been looking for. Don't get me wrong. I love The Mandalorian. It's a fantastic, fun adventure story and probably my favorite Star Wars thing since the Return of the Jedi. But I'm also extremely glad for them to bring in other creative styles and especially something more mature like this show is shaping up to be. Very much looking forward to your take on this show, guys, and to coming on for a few episodes here and there myself. I really look forward to that. Yeah, Jason's definitely going to come on, which should be good. And P.S. the music is really cool too. Yeah, and at the end of the second episode, there was this basically a drum solo as the tension build. There was a big drum solo that came in.
Yeah, that's as Cassian, is that as he's walking through the scrapyard, right? Isn't it? He's about
exactly.
Yeah, and he almost Cape Fears it straight into the lens and then to black. And it's like, And Kristen Halberg writes and says, "I'm totally invested in this story. I do wish they would put all three of the episodes together as it works so well together. Marva and Bix are fantastic. I hope we see them throughout the season. Why do we have to wait another week?" And I agree with you on the Marva and Bix thing. I think they're amazing.
I think they're great characters, and I look forward to seeing them in future episodes. And Jeffrey Kalovic says, "Best Star Wars show after The Mandalorian. Why can't they just make all of them like this? Better cinematography, acting, and overall grittiness. Much more appealing than Obi-Wan and Boba Fett. This is how I would foresee modern Star Wars show and movies to look and feel." Absolutely right,
mate. I agree. I think actually, Jeffrey, as well, I think they are learning from every show they make, and hopefully they're getting better and better. I mean, and also, I think as long as you can keep a consistent showrunner for a whole season, I think that helps as well, so you don't start deviating and stuff.
I found was a problem is they were just using different people all through it, and no matter how hard you try, you're always going to have a slightly different feel between episodes.
Yeah. Yes. And Shay Weeder writes in and says, "Wow, I enjoyed these episodes so much. Gritty, dark, and with the realism seldom seen in Star Wars. This world feels run down and lived in. Superior writing and costuming. I can't wait for more. Seems more cinematic than any other series in the Star Wars universe." Hear, hear, Shay. Hear, hear.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I thought the costuming was brilliant. It follows the Star Wars maxim of no zippers and no buttons.
Of course.
They're all held together with hook and eyes and straps and things like that and buckles, But no zippers. Although I did notice a guy with a hoodie on, which I thought was a bit of a real world. They slipped that one, but, you know. There are hoods in Star Wars, but maybe not hoodies.
Maybe it was a pullover one, Jonathan. Maybe we'll see.
All right. Well, listen, that's our show. Thanks for listening, everyone. And if you want to write in or leave us a message, you can find all our contact information at podcastica.com.
And while you're there, be sure to check out all the other shows we have as well.
Yes, I'm looking forward to catching up on all the Rings of Power. I've got a few stored up, so I'm going to watch a few of them.
I'm binging into The Sandman at the moment as well. I'm loving.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I'm a huge fan of that, and I have all the original signed comics. So.
Oh, you do?
Yeah,
that's cool.
I was lucky enough to meet.
Yeah, Neil Gaiman's brilliant. Yeah. And if you've been watching that, definitely check out the Sandman podcast on podcastigo.com.
Yeah.
Thanks again, everybody. And don't forget to follow me on Instagram at jbookalil. And James, you have anything to promote?
Yeah. You can follow me on Instagram at James Dimmock. And also, we've just created a clean vegan protein powder. It's made from just ancient raw ingredients, hence the name Odin. And it's available on Amazon. And also you can find us on Instagram as well. And Odin is spelled ODYN, nutrition. And drink with the gods.
Excellent. I'm still waiting to get my free pack.
Your free, yes, yeah. It's in the mail. It's in the mail, sir. Yes. You can subscribe also, Jonathan. Yes, feel free. 10% discount on Amazon if you subscribe. Oh,
excellent.
Everybody else gets 15%. Jonathan gets 10% discount. All right. Thanks, guys. don't forget to rate and review and tell all your friends about us. Let's try and get a few more people bored, listening.
Yeah, exactly right. It really helped to grow our show, and we'd love to keep going. And make sure you send in plenty of feedback, and a voicemail or two would be nice.
Oh, and Jonathan.
Yes.
May the Force be with you.
May the Force
be with you.